Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. The MSS crew would like to once again thank you for joining us here in the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. This is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you yet another exciting and exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Well, folks, as promised, we are back again, doing what we do best, and that is hooking you up with the highest quality OTR surprises. Let me get things rolling here tonight by introducing the presenter for tonight's program, Mad Max Crawford. Yep, he is at it again, doing his thing, and that is putting together some OTR surprises for your listening enjoyment. If everyone could just please sit back, grab a cold drink and a very tasty snack, and enjoy the program. Mad Max, the microphone is yours.
Hi everybody, this is your host Maxwell to welcome you to Michael's Saturday Surprise for August 2nd, Saturday. Let's begin our hour of excitement with Incredible But True and Here Will You Lie. This is episode 38. Enjoy!
Dreams, the modern psychologist tells us, are the expression of unconscious drives, the fulfillment of wishes which we repress in our waking life. And yet, if we accept this theory in its entirety, how shall we interpret the vision that appeared in a dream to Colonel George Czerny?
For the Russian army on the Eastern Front, victories were scarce during the last days of the year 1916. But one contingent, under the command of Colonel Czerny, seized an Austrian town late in October. And after several hours of uneasy vigilance, the colonel retired promptly to his room and went to bed. As he slept, he saw himself in a dream, standing on the cobblestone street just outside the inn. A few yards away, at the next corner, stood a misty figure clad in white, and it beckoned to him.
Follow me. Through this street will they carry you.
The vision led him along the narrow, winding street. And then, at a corner where the village church stood, it turned to the left into a crooked little lane.
Tomorrow morning, when the enemy returns, when the town is destroyed, when you are captured, then will you be borne hither, and here will you lie.
The figure pointed, and the colonel saw that the building before him was a hospital. In an instant, he was inside, walking behind the figure down a long corridor. Outside a room, they paused.
Mark it well. 317. Here will you lie.
It was 2 o'clock in the morning when the colonel awoke. Unable to sleep again, he arose and stepped out on the balcony that jutted off his room. He had not noticed it before, but the street below was cobblestone. Indeed, it was the same street that he had seen in his dream. Acting on a sudden and irresistible impulse, the colonel dressed and went downstairs and out of the inn. He followed the street, but now, of course, there was no figure in white leading the way. Soon he came to a corner where a church stood, and he turned to his left. Before him stretched a crooked little lane. And at the end of it, he saw a building that was unmistakably a hospital. A night clerk, sitting behind a desk, arose and saluted him.
I imagine you have plenty of patients these days, huh?
Oh, yes, sir, of course. Only one vacant room left. On the third floor, sir.
The third floor? Could you tell me the number of the room?
The number? Yes, certainly. It's number 317.
Back at the inn, he set about awakening the officers.
Wake up! Potanikov, wake up! I'll be upstairs immediately. Potanikov!
He knocked sharply on the door of each room, shouting the name of the officer within until he received a reply. And gradually, they began to appear, sleepy-eyed and bewildered.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! The enemy is planning to counterattack early in the morning.
The next morning, the Germans had returned and were pounding their former stronghold with shells. An hour later, they attacked in overwhelming force. But by this time, the Russians, were several miles away. Yes, though they were not aware of it, they had been saved by a dream which was only partially realized because it had been heeded in time. A dream incredible but true.
That was Incredible But True. And Here Will You Lie, episode number 38. Now it's time for Favorite Story and the Bet. As aired on March the 5th, 1949.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. The man named Anton Chekhov was a great playwright. The Russian Shakespeare, they called him, and a master of the short story. He was a gentle soul with an unusual understanding of the heart of man. And in this week's favorite story, you'll find he proves himself a great searcher after truth. Charles Boyer selected Chekhov's The Bet as his favorite. Claude Sweeten has added the unusual instrument called the theremin to his orchestra, and John Beale and William Conrad are our leading players. Here's Act One of The Bet. Square of light in the corner of the garden. It is the window of a gardener's cottage, woven across with vines which show black against the square of light like veins in the hand of an old woman. There is no moon. The garden looks like a jungle in the starlight. It wasn't always so, for there was a time when this estate had gardeners to care for these grounds. But there are no gardeners now. So the vines and plants and shrubs have overgrown each other and covered the little cottage, all four walls. Even the door is laced across with intertwining vines. Yet, there is a light inside. There is a candle burning inside that garden cottage. And there must be someone there who lit the candle. We can't see him. The window is too high up on the wall of the hut. But he is there. No one has seen him for 15 years. But he is there. Tonight, the owner of this estate, the man named Stakovich, will call on that man in the cottage to kill him. 15 years ago tonight, it was different. There was laughter in this house.
That is a very amusing point of view, Sergei.
I don't think it's an amusing subject.
Well, our young lawyer speaks.
Tell us, Semyon. Why is it not an amusing subject?
To take a man's life, that's murder.
Well, for the individual to do such a thing, yes, for the individual private citizen. But for the state to take a man's life, that is another matter. Now, are you going to try to tell us that when a criminal is convicted in a fair trial by a court of justice and is ordered to be hung by the Tsar's executioners, that is murder?
The state is not God, Stakovich. It has no right to take away something that it can't give back. And for that reason, I insist that it's wrong for the state to take away a man's life.
So, my friend, you would allow murderers to wander in the streets unmolested?
Well, there are prisons.
True, true. But is not the prison a means of taking away life? The result is the same. Execution kills instantly, imprisonment kills by degrees. Now, who is the more humane executioner? One who kills you in a few seconds? Or one who draws the life out of you incessantly
for years.
Well, then they're both wrong. But if I were offered my choice between capital punishment and life imprisonment, I would certainly choose the prison. For it's better to live somehow than not to live at all.
Is life so priceless? 1,000 men take their own lives every day.
Well, then they're fools.
Perhaps not. You see, Semyon, I am a very wealthy man. If you were to ask me how many millions I am worth, I could not tell you. Everything which has meaning in my life has been purchased by these millions. My houses, my wardrobe, my carriages, my stables, the good food and drink you've enjoyed with me tonight. Now, take away my fortune, and I would as soon you took away my life as well.
I'm sorry for you.
Your empty talk about life in a prison. Now tell me, can you imagine what it's like? The dismal, dreary days, the nights without end, the gray walls blending into the gray earth and the gray sky. You would prefer such a life to the repose of the grave?
You speak as one who has seen the inside of a prison.
And you speak as one who has neither manners nor common sense.
Sorry.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I will bet 2 million rubles that you could not endure even 5 years in a prison cell.
Are you serious?
Perfectly.
If you mean this, seriously, I'll bet that I can stay in the confinement of a prison, not 5 years, but 15.
15?
Yes.
Done. I stake 2 millions, you stake your freedom.
Stakovich, this is absurd. This is insanity.
It's agreed. You stake 2 million rubles, I my freedom. If I remain confined in one room, a cell...
Completely alone, no one to see, no one to talk with...
In solitary confinement, then, for 15 years... You will pay me 2 millions, is that correct?
That's correct.
The most ridiculous bet I ever heard.
We're both gentlemen of honor. There's no need to put this in writing.
Sergei is our witness.
I want no part of this matter.
All right, now, here is how we do it. There is a brick hut at the foot of my garden, a one-room cottage where we keep some of the gardening tools. Now, this will be your prison.
Agreed.
You will be under strict observation. The door will not be locked. But if you so much as set 1 foot past the threshold, you shall have lost the bet.
Gentlemen, you cannot mean to go through with this.
Wait, I must have books, pen and ink, writing paper.
All right, all right. You may write letters, but you may not receive any in reply. No letters, no newspapers. You are not to see any living people. You are not to hear a human voice.
The terms are not so harsh in a prison.
However, he may have any books he wishes. Whatever food he likes, a musical instrument, perhaps.
A piano. I should like a piano.
Granted.
But if I can speak with no one, how shall I make my wishes known?
Yes, I believe there is one window in the hut, yes, high up on the garden side. Now, you will write a note with your requests, leave it on the windowsill. The books you want, the food you wish, these will be left for you by my servants on the same windowsill.
When shall this begin?
Whenever you say.
As soon as possible. Midnight tomorrow night, the 19th of May. And at midnight on the 19th of May, 15 years hence, you will pay me 2 million rubles.
If you remain in confinement, which of course you will not.
Gentlemen, come to your senses. This is a joke, my friends. Let it pass as such.
No. I have made an agreement. I intend to abide by it.
No, seriously, Semyon, Sergei is right. This is foolishness. 2 millions is nothing to me, but you stand to lose 3 or 4 years of your life. Now, I say 3 or 4 because you'll never stick it out any longer. And don't forget, young fellow, that voluntary imprisonment is much harder to endure than forced imprisonment. You will be your own jailer. A simple muscular movement, a few footsteps, and you can be as free as any other man. Now, are you foolish enough to think that you could keep this bargain, even for 2 million rubles?
I shall be at the gardener's cottage 10 minutes before midnight tomorrow, according to the terms of the bet.
Why did I make this bet? What is the good? My young friend loses 15 years of his life and I throw away 2 millions. For what? Will it convince people that the gallows are any worse or better than imprisonment? No. No, it's all foolishness. On my part, it was the cruel joke of a well-fed man. On the part of my young friend, well, greed, I suppose. Greed for 2 million rubles.
Why did I make this bet? Well, the answer's simple. Is there anything a man in my position would not do for 2 million rubles? But no, it's not the money alone. It's not the promise of wealth and complete independence when I'm free again. It was a challenge that was beyond my power to refuse. Something enormous, something irresistible forced me to accept this bet.
The time, Sergei? 3 minutes until midnight.
3 minutes to live, Semyon. To see stars overhead, to smell the wind fresh off the meadow. 3 minutes and you go to your death. A slow, tortuous death in life. That little hut is going to be your grave, my young friend. But an open grave that you can leave any time and rejoin the living. You think you will refuse? You think you have the faintest chance of winning this bet?
The time. 2 minutes before midnight.
Semyon, consider, I am not pleading with you because I wish to save paying you 2 millions. That is only 2 grains in the sands of my fortune. But I cannot bear to be the instrument of this useless gesture. Semyon, how old are you? 30? 28? Or 29, more likely. 15 years from tonight, when you come out through that door, you will be past 40. And you will look... How do you think you will look, my friend?
1 minute? Less than that.
Wait! Semyon, I cannot let you do this thing. You are young and foolish, but you are my friend. If it's money you need, I will give you 20,000 rubles. 20,000, and we will forget this foolish bet, huh? 30,000. 30,000, if you will not go through that door. I cannot have it on my conscience. 30,000. 40. 50,000.
When the door closes behind him, and he looks at the four walls which will close him in, day and night, night and day, for 15 years, what does a man think about when the door closes behind him?
Ready for Act Two of Charles Boyer's favorite story, The Bet, by Anton Chekhov. Dramatized and directed by Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee, and starring John Beale and William Conrad. What does a man think about when a prison door closes behind him? When he sees the four walls which will be the boundary of his world for 15 years, what does he think? Ivanov heard the door close, the latch snap, and then he felt nothing but numbness. He had sentenced himself. He had undertaken this fearful confinement as a bet. If he could last out 15 years, it would bring him 2 million rubles. 2 million rubles. What is 2 million rubles? He blew out his candle and felt his way along the brick wall to his bed. Fully clothed, he lay down and immediately fell asleep.
I awoke with a start. Daylight. I didn't know where I was. And then I remembered and began to take stock of my surroundings. A straw-filled mattress, a chair, a table, a bucket of water, and a piano. I'd never had time to learn to play. I could study now. Now I would have time to learn. I would send for a manual of the piano. I would teach myself. I placed a note high up on the window ledge and waited. Shortly it was drawn out of my sight by an unseen hand. And in due time, some food and a book appeared on a tray there on my windowsill. And I ate and then began practicing the chords and scales in the piano manual. And I was terrified. The square of sunlight from my window had scarcely moved. With all that had happened, my note, the breakfast, my clumsy fingering of the piano, Less than an hour had passed. Since I awoke, that patch of sunlight had moved less than 6 inches. That morning was the longest morning of my life.
And what do you hear from your guest at the bottom of the garden, Stakovich? Does he seem contented?
Here, read his notes.
My dear jailer, please send me coffee and gruel and a manual for the study of the pianoforte.
That was his first note 2 weeks ago.
You complied?
At once. Read some more.
My dear jailer, make me laugh. Send me a book which will make me laugh. How pitiful.
Yes. Read this. He sent it an hour ago.
I beg of you, dear jailer, when the servant brings my coffee tomorrow, let him say good morning. I must hear the sound of a human voice. Well, Stakovich, what will you do?
The prisoner will be served in silence. Those were the terms of the bet.
Just put the tray in my window. Say something. Speak to me. Say, here is your breakfast, Semyon Ivanov. Or just say, God be with you. Is that too much to ask? Curse me then. Only let me hear the sound of a human voice. I can hear a human voice. I can hear all the human voices I like. I have only to go to the door, touch the latch, step outside, and I'm as free as other men. I will! My fingers reached the latch, but I did not go out the door. Something stopped me. I went back to my piano. Hour after hour, for days and months on end, I sat at my piano keyboard until I knew I was master of the instrument. I sent for books till they were stacked to the ceiling of my cell. The great writing of all time. The philosophers, Aristotle, Socrates, Confucius. In the second year, I read 600 volumes. In the third year, I approached the realm of the natural sciences, chemistry, biology, astronomy. I set about the study of languages, Latin, Greek, French, German, even Sanskrit, and Aramaic, and early Egyptian. These studies occupied 7 years of my confinement, so that no season which passed seemed half so long as that first morning in the gardener's cottage.
Oh, Sergei, I'm very glad to see you.
I came as quickly as I could, are you ill? What is wrong?
At a time such as this, a man needs someone to talk with. My friend, since sunrise this morning, I have lost 50 million rubles.
50 million rubles? How did it happen?
How? Small loss, I try to recover it with a larger investment. I lose again, double the stakes, and so on.
Did you lose?
Everything? No. No, Sergei, I have a few millions remaining.
What about the bet?
I can't afford to lose it now. I can only hope that my visitor at the foot of the garden will choose to escape before the 15th year. Either to escape or to die.
These events were not known to me, only guessed at. My books came in cheaper bindings. The food was plain now,
I could see the vines growing wild across my little square of sky. I became terribly depressed. My 10th year in that prison cell was a nightmare. My mind refused to grasp. My eyes refused to read. My tongue to taste. And my legs ached to walk a long distance. And then one day, I found on my windowsill a book I hadn't requested. The Holy Bible.
For 2 years, he has read nothing else.
You still supply whatever he asks for?
I place everything on his windowsill myself.
What of your servants?
I no longer keep any servants, Sergei. Things have gone very badly with me on the exchange. Still more losses.
And if you lose the bet?
I'm still a gentleman, a man of honor. I've given my word and I shall keep it. By selling all my property, even my clothing, I shall be able to raise 2 million rubles. There is the square of yellow light, crisscrossed with vines, like veins in the hand of an old woman. An hour from now it will be midnight, and he will have won the bet. An hour from now he will have 2 million rubles, and I will have the coat on my back. That is all. There is nothing left. The man must die. Semyon. Gone. He's gone.
No, my friend. I'm here at the piano. Put away your gun. It's not yet midnight. You haven't lost the bet. Not yet.
Semyon, I must tell you, I do not intend to lose it.
There is something I must say to you before this business is concluded. What music is appropriate? What shall I play? The Danse Macabre? In a few moments, unless you choose to put a bullet through my head, I shall be a millionaire twice over and a free man after 15 years in a solitary cell. These 15 years, I have studied earthly life. In your books, I have spanned continents, sung songs, hunted deer in the forests. Through the magic of your poets, beautiful women, like clouds, ethereal, have whispered wonderful tales to me that made my head spin. I have climbed to the summit of Mont Blanc and seen the sunrise and watched it turn the rim of the ocean red at twilight. I saw from there how lightning cleaved the clouds. I saw green forests, fields, rivers, lakes, cities. In your books, I cast myself into the emptiness of space, worked miracles, preached new religions, all inside this prison cell. The sum total of human thought is compressed into a little lump in my skull, and I despise your way of life. Everything in your existence is void, frail, a mirage. You have taken falsehood for truth, ugliness for beauty. As I read your books, I am appalled at how you could have traded heaven for earth. And to show you my contempt for what you live by, I hereby give up my claim to the 2 million rubles.
What?
I give up this fortune, which I once considered paradise, by leaving this cell at 5 minutes before midnight. Isn't that the time now?
Yes, 5 minutes before midnight.
Then I shall wish you good night.
my dear Jim. And may God be with you.
I brushed by him on the path.
Yes.
But it is not yet midnight. You are saved. You're still a rich man. Laugh, my friend. You've won the bet.
I'm not sure, Sergei. Whether I've won or lost.
You have the answer. Did the man named Stakovich win or lose? At any rate, the bet is a great story. Our thanks to John Beale and William Conrad for their performances, to Claude Sweeten and Dr. Samuel Hoffman, who supplied the unusual music, and to Charles Boyer, who chose Chekhov's moving yarn as his favorite story. Next week, we're presenting an old American favorite, probably the most popular one-act play ever written, The Valiant. You probably played in it yourself at high school or college. And it's the particular selection of one of America's favorite personalities, Bob Hope. We have an unusual cast in this moving story of a condemned man. We hope you'll be listening.
That was Favorite Story and The Bet, as aired on March the 5th, 1949. And now, let's hear our final exciting yet very emotional show, Suspense, and The Phones Die First, as aired on May the 8th, 1956.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you a story based on fact. A man's last hours in a death cell awaiting execution. We call it, The Phones Die First. So now, starring Harry Bartell, here is tonight's suspense play, The Phones Die First.
Bradley speaking. Oh, yes, Warden. Brunner, a visit? But it's almost four. Well, Brunner's due downstairs, you understand? If you say so, sir. I'll call the row right away.
Sarge? Sarge?
Yeah, Brenner.
How about these law books? I got a lot of them here.
You can give them to the library if you want, or the fellas here. Whatever you want to do.
How about the guys, huh?
Fine with me.
Well, that's about everything. Except my personal stuff. Do I have time, Sarge?
It's not quite four yet. Oh, excuse me, Brunner.
Sure.
Rowe. Yes, sir. He's about ready. Oh, Captain, are you coming over to go with Bruner? Or shall we... Oh, fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's all right. Yeah, we'll do. Mm-hmm. Bye. Bill?
Yes, Sarge?
The captain's on his way up for Bruner. You and Doug take the gun rail, just in case, you know.
Right, Sarge. You know something?
What?
I'll be glad when the cap takes me off this tour. Each time one of them poor devils takes the big walk, I do too.
You'll get used to it. They do.
Hello, boys.
Afternoon, Captain.
We got a problem.
Oh?
Warden called me. Brenner's got a specially approved visit. His sister.
You're going to take him downstairs first?
No, I don't think so. I think we'll take him over to my office to visit with him, and then downstairs from there. Hello, Frank.
Oh, Cap.
How's it going?
Okay, I guess.
It's just about four, Frank.
Yeah.
But first, you got a visit.
Me? Who?
Your sister.
Oh, I thought maybe it was my lawyer with some news.
Well, if there is any, Frank, you'll hear. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, Cap, I won't worry.
Sergeant tells me you want to say goodbye to some of the fellas up here. Well, that's okay with me if you do, but not too long, huh?
When am I seeing my sister?
As soon as we leave here, in my office.
We aren't coming back here, huh?
No, Frank.
Downstairs?
Unlock Brunner, will you?
Yes, sir.
I'll wait for you at the elevator gate, Frank.
Thanks, Cap.
You got everything, Brunner?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Frank. Over here.
Don't worry. I hadn't forgotten you, Whitey.
I'll take care of your pictures for you if you want.
Well, thanks, but I already gave them to the sergeant here. He's going to send them home.
Oh.
But I tell you what you can do. You can take his dictionary, mine. Maybe it'll do you some good.
What do I want with a book? Has a lot of big words in it. Where we're going... Sure, Frank, I'd like it. Thanks. Dream the big dream for me, will you?
So long, Mike.
So long, Frank.
Hey, Frank.
What's happening, Lucky?
Nothing shaking.
I'd like you to take these books here off my hands, would you?
Oh, sure, sure. We can all use them.
No, especially you. They've had a charm for you. They kept you from taking the walk I'm taking today.
I don't know. I've got a terrible hunch I'm turning the last few pages.
No, no, you keep writing those writs. Those law books still work. Maybe not always in time for everybody, but they've done all right for you.
See, Frank, I wish... I you know.
Sure, I understand.
We'll be thinking about you tomorrow.
Do that. Hi, kid.
Bruner.
How you doing?
Sick of this crummy place.
You aren't in a hurry to leave it, are you?
I don't know. This whole joint.
You want to go with me?
If you think I'll kiss anybody goodbye, you're crazy. No one's ever handed me anything. I don't expect them to do it now.
You have it your way, kid. I think you're all noise.
Listen, Bruner, I don't see giving these bulls anything. When I go, they want to have an extra goon squad waiting because I'm going to leave them something to remember me
Look,
by.
Kid, I ain't got much time to talk. I want you to have something of mine. Here.
What is it? Tom Sawyer. You a jokester?
No, I want you to have it.
I don't get it.
Well, you read it. Maybe it'll make you see somebody you never knew. When everything was wonderful tomorrow.
Sure, Bruno. I'll read it in the easy chair downstairs.
Sure, kid. I'll be seeing you.
Sure thing.
Sorry about the kid, Frank. Talks too much.
You get scared all kinds of ways, Cap.
Yeah, maybe so. You ready, Frank?
No. Let's go.
I'm going to leave you and your sister alone in my office. It's not routine, but this time we'll forget routine for a moment. I want you to promise me you'll come when I call you. Agreed, Frank?
Thanks, Cap.
Frank.
Hello, sis.
Oh, Frank.
Now, listen, honey. We haven't got much time. We shouldn't spend it bawling, huh?
You're right.
How'd you get up here?
The train.
How's Mom and Dad?
Oh, Frank.
I ask you a question, honey.
They're fine. You know they send their love.
I'm glad you made them stay home. There's no need of it.
How have you been, darling?
Fine.
They tell me that this is our last chance to visit.
That's right, honey.
Oh, Frank.
Yeah, listen, Ruthie. Listen close. There's not much time left. I want you to do something for me, something important. You understand?
Yes.
I want you to call Alice's family.
What?
I want you to call Alice's family.
But, Frank...
Now, please, honey. I killed Alice, but I want them to know, as I've always said, that it wasn't from hate or anything like that. It just hurt. Knowing after all those years that we were together, that she really cared for someone else.
I will, Frank, I promise.
I couldn't see life without her, and it was even worse to live knowing that she was with someone else and not me. If I couldn't have her, nobody else could. Maybe they'll understand.
Frank.
Listen, honey, I want you to go now, please.
But, darling...
No, Ruthie, this is no good for both of us. You go on.
Oh, Frank, why? Why?
Would you give me a kiss?
Frank.
Thanks, honey. Now go. Go on. This is it, huh, Sarge? Last stop. When I was upstairs on the row, I used to see him come down here the afternoon before, just like today. I always wondered. Well, wondering's over.
Got enough cigarettes?
You know, I don't smoke much, Sarge. It's bad for the system. Hey, what time did Cap say he'd be back?
Around 6.
Well, it's almost that now, isn't it?
Just about.
Time is something we'll all be keeping track of pretty close the next 14 hours, huh?
Sorry, Frank. I'm late, I know.
Well, that's all right, Cap. I'm in no hurry, believe me.
Warden's coming over around 9.
You think he'll have any news?
Well, I understand he's been in touch with the state capitol. It's routine, of course, you know.
I don't have much of a chance, do I, Cap?
I really don't know, Frank.
Well, I know.
Anything I can get you, Frank?
Yeah, there is. A phonograph.
I think that can be arranged.
And some nice records. Something classical. Something easy on the ear.
I'll certainly try. Meanwhile, Chaplin's asked if you want to see him.
Of course I do. I'm no fool. Tomorrow morning isn't going to be easy. I never kidded myself on that. I don't want to walk in there alone.
Hey, Whitey. Whitey.
What?
The lights will be out in a minute or two. 10 o'clock.
So?
I wonder what Bruner's doing.
He's probably doing it hard.
Mm. He was an okay guy. Never could quite figure. Hey, what'd he give you?
His dictionary.
Dictionary? You know what he gave me? Tom Sawyer. Can you imagine?
Listen, kid. He had you figured a long time ago when you first come up here. All you did when he came by this afternoon was lip off.
What was I supposed to do? Break down in tears?
Don't be so sure of yourself. But like I was saying, guys like him you never figure out.
First they're with you, and then you're sitting like us right now remembering them. And you're glad they were with you.
What could I say?
I don't know.
Hey, Whitey, you think Brunner will really go tomorrow morning?
Who knows?
One of the bulls was telling me a couple of weeks ago that when one of us gets it, they knock off all the phones an hour before. Said something about keeping the lines clear except for the one downstairs. Real slick, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, real slick. Everything dies in order. The free world when you come in here. Then the last light of day in the afternoon before. And just before they sit you down in a little green room, they kill all the phones. And then they go about killing you.
You are listening to The Phones Die First, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Underworld characters who want an easy buck and aren't fussy how they make it are endlessly inventive. Fortunately, the agents of the FBI are even quicker and shrewder in their counter-efforts to foil their plans and ferret them out of hiding. You can hear another startling drama on the popular CBS radio program, The FBI in Peace and War, over most of these same stations, tomorrow night.
And now we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Harry Bartell, starring in tonight's production, The Phones Die First, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Hello, Frank. I'm Father Malahan.
Hello.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece you're playing.
Yeah, Father. I'll turn it off if you want.
No, please don't. It's beautiful. I understand you're a Protestant.
Yeah?
You asked for a priest? You know, there's a Protestant chaplain here who...
Yeah, I know, Father. He's probably a right guy, but I don't know how to say it. I've heard ever since I came to this place practically a year ago that you were quite the good Joe. I'm sorry, Father. I didn't mean it.
Please, please. I'm flattered. You wanted a friend.
Yeah.
Well, Frank, I suppose when it's all said and done, what is religion? Faith, but a friend. Sort of hold on to. Hey, I've been so busy all day, I haven't really eaten anything yet. How about you?
I'm not too hungry.
Oh, come on. You're not going to let me eat alone, are you? Tell you what we'll do. We'll phone from here and have Smitty send up something to...
Smitty, you're a brave warrior, Father.
Oh, I see. You've heard of Smitty, our prize chef, huh? Well, he can't do any more than...
And kill us, Father?
I don't think that's called for, do you, Frank?
I'm sorry.
Well, what are you going to have, Frank? I'll match you dish for dish. Oh. I should have known better than to try to eat more than a Dutchman.
I think you did pretty good, Father, considering that you haven't got much to stow your food away.
Hey, you casting aspersions at this thin house of mine? You'd be surprised.
What time is it?
Midnight. A little past.
Would you mind, Father, staying here tonight? I know it isn't the best hotel, but...
Be glad to. The fellas were right. You're an okay. Where's your home, Frank?
You mean where I was born or where I live?
Both.
I was born in Seattle, but I spent most of my life up around Modesto.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful farming country. I've been through there often.
We aren't so far from it here.
No, we're not.
And in about 10 hours from now, I'll be a long ways away.
Frank, you a fatalist?
No, Father. But I know when not to kid myself.
Oh, I don't think it's kidding yourself to believe that even though we may be in some dire straits, that often we actually come out of them.
Not this time.
Well, if I were you, I'd sort of put my trust in someone much more sure than you and me. Then I'd relax as best I knew how.
Sure.
Yes?
Mr. Johnson?
Oh, Miss Bruner, I was just going to call you. I have an appointment with the governor at 9 this morning.
Is he in town?
Yes, we're in luck. He left the Capitol last night, and this morning my secretary called me that he's staying with friends here.
Have you already talked with him?
Yes, but just briefly. He's agreed to talk with me regarding Frank this morning. Miss Bruner.
Yes?
Don't raise your hopes at this late hour. As Frank's lawyer, all I can do is present what we've presented before and had turned down.
I understand, Mr. Johnson, but you can't blame me for hanging on and believing.
No, of course not. I promise I'll call you when I hear definite news.
You'll call regardless of what it might be.
Yes, I promise.
Good morning, Father.
Good morning, Captain.
Bruner, how are you?
Thanks for the record you sent over and the phonograph.
Well, I was glad to do it. Bruner, the warden won't be over until time. He told me to tell you he'll be in personal touch with the governor this morning.
You're in time for breakfast, Captain.
I don't mind if I do.
You feel like trusting Smitty again, Frank?
What have I got to lose?
You know, Captain, I'm getting to be a freeloader around here. Last night, again this morning. What'll the budget director say?
I think he'd say let's eat.
All right, Captain. Let's have orange juice, bacon and eggs, hot cakes, toast, and strong black coffee. More coffee, Frank? How about you, Captain?
No, thanks, Father. I've got to be going. There's some things I've got to attend to.
Captain.
Yes, Bruner?
I'd like to ask you something.
Sure.
When it comes time this morning, which isn't too long now, I want just you and the Father to go with me. You won't need any guards. Will you promise?
I'll see, Bruner.
Hey, Whitey?
Lucky.
You checking the time?
Who ain't?
Frank was all right, huh? I wish he could have been around longer.
Hey, you're the lawyer up here. How about this last-minute stay routine? Couldn't Frank get it as well as the next guy? Hey, you know, we've seen him get him.
Yeah, it's 9 o'clock now. If they're going to give him one, they better be warming up the warden's phone.
Man, I'd like to see him come up that elevator again. It'll do us all good.
Are you guys praying over there?
Why don't you drop dead?
Oh, no. No, they're going to have to do the honors for me.
Hey, Whitey. You ever see such a screwball?
You'll meet a different kid come his time to follow Frank. Believe me.
Father, I'm scared.
If you weren't, I wouldn't understand you.
Will it hurt?
Frank, do you trust me?
You know I do.
Then I want you not to say anything more. All right?
But, Father, I
like you, Frank.
Because you know something? You're like a brother of mine.
Is he a priest?
No, he's making money, a contractor in St. Paul.
I'm glad you became a priest.
I am too, Frank, because I met you.
You're just being nice.
Oh, no, Frank. I'd say this had we met outside. You know, we can't really judge our fellow man always by what he does or doesn't do. What we see is but a little bit of the man. God sees all of him. What's important? The heart. The intent of his life. I wouldn't worry if I were you, Frank. Whatever comes.
Father, I don't know what I would have done without you. You're a good friend.
Well, all of those of you who have proper identification and credentials for admittance to the chamber area, prepare them now for showing before entering. I must remind you again that no smoking or talking will be allowed once you're in the outer chamber itself. And I must remind you also that once you are inside, you will not be allowed to leave. Should you feel the need for assistance at any time during the ensuing proceedings, a custodial officer will be there to assist you. May I say now, if there's any among you who wishes to leave, you may do so. Very well. You will sign the register inside the chamber, giving your name, address, and professional capacity. I recognize a few faces in the group, but to those who are here for the first time, we do not treat these proceedings as a show, but a grim task to be done as quickly and mercifully as possible. Will you come with me, please?
Chamber. Yes? Yes, sir. Yeah, I'll tell them. Yes, sir. Brunner, it was the warden.
Yeah.
He hasn't been able to reach the governor.
Yeah, I know. The warden couldn't reach him. He just don't want to be reached.
Frank.
That's your show, Father. The make-believe's all.
Frank. Will you listen to me?
I have been, Father, and I'm still going through that green door
Frank,
over there.
Frank, as a friend, would you pray with me? It's a prayer we both know, that I'm sure. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come.
Father, we're ready.
So are we. Would you give us a moment?
Surely.
Frank, would you put your hand in mine for just a moment?
Sure, Father.
And then we'll walk like only friends can. Side by side. Each giving strength and peace to the other.
Father.
I'm with you.
Father won't have to go.
Yes, of course. Come on, Frank. Let's walk together.
Chamber. Yes? Warden! It's the governor's office.
Father.
Yes, Frank. We're going to be all right.
Suspense, in which Harry Bartell starred in tonight's presentation of The Phones Die First. Next week, we bring you a story of a woman who finds a letter warning of death and has only 3 hours to deliver it. We call it The Death Parade. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed in Hollywood by Anthony Ellis. Tonight's story was written by Jules Maitland. The music was composed by Renee Garagank and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Heard in tonight's cast were Barney Phillips, William Justine, Tom McKee, Jack Crucian, Herbert Ellis, Richard Prenna, and Eleanor Tannen.
Nothing gives old man trouble as much personal trouble as a smile, and nobody seems more dedicated to making life tough for old man trouble than Arthur Godfrey. Tomorrow and every Monday through Friday, listen over most of these same stations for Arthur Godfrey Time. It's one sure way to tune in on happiness. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News to be followed on most of these same stations by My Son Jeep. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
That was Suspense, and The Phones Die First, as aired on May the 8th, 1956. Well, friends, what did you think of those shows? I really enjoyed them, and boy, oh boy, that Suspense one was really a tearjerker. All right, I'm going to let you all go now. Thank you for listening, everybody, and come back again. Now I pass the mic off to Louise.
Okay, Mad Max, I am going to take it from here. Shut things down and wrap things up for this week's broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. As usual, if you have any questions, comments, complaints, or maybe even a request or two, please address them to mikeamelli@earthlink.net. That's MIKEAMELI @earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and turning over the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. Otherwise, me and Mad Max will be coming after you. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, goodbye, and good night.